Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Judges chapter 18, verses 1 through 31, the entire chapter, which I will entitle The Danites Settle in Laish. Our context is this. We're in the appendices of the book of Joshua. I'm going to assume that these occurred before the 12 judges occurred. That's debatable. It's hard to say, but just easier, I think, to look at it that way. And in the previous appendix, Judges verses chapter 17, we saw the story of Micah of the hill country of Ephraim, who stole 1,100 pieces of silver from his mother. Mother cursed him. He gave it back. She was so happy. She says, "Praise the Lord, let's build an idolatrous idol," which they did. And then they got a Levite priest from Bethlehem to come up and serve as priest in this fake tabernacle, fake temple, fake place of worship that they had. Now, what happens in the last chapter, in chapter 17, is going to be relevant for what happens here in chapter 18, as we'll see. So let's start now in Judges 18, verses 1 and 2. In those days, there was no king in Israel. And that's the phrase that makes you think that this is before the other 12 judges, because that word king can be translated as judge or deliverer or leader. It's a loose word. And you could read it, there was no judge in Israel. There was no authority in Israel. It doesn't say here in the text, but this is what other texts say. And every man did what was right in his own eyes. Verse 1, in those days there was no king in Israel, and the Danite tribe was looking for territory to occupy. Up to that time, no territory had been captured by them among the tribes of Israel. So the Danites sent out 5 brave men from all their clans, from Zorah and Eshtaol, to scout out the land and explore it. They told them, "Go and explore the land." The "they" is the Danites told them, the 5 scouts, "Go and explore the land." They came to the hill country of Ephraim as far as the home of Micah and spent the night there. All right, as I said, verse 1, in those days is probably after the death of Joshua, before Othniel, the first judge, before the 12 judges. There was no king in Israel. Danite tribe was looking for territory to occupy. This is not referring to the inheritance that they had gotten in the book of Joshua. They got an inheritance just like all the other tribes. Joshua 19:40 says this, "The 7th lot fell to the tribe of the sons of Dan according to their families." So they had land allotted, but why was it not sufficient? Well, it could be that the allotment was too small, but since that was controlled by God's lot, I don't know why it would be too small. More probably it was because part of the allotment was unsubdued. The Canaanites weren't wiped out. Judges 1, verses 34 through 35 says this, "Then the Amorites forced the sons of Dan into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come down to the valley." If you'll look at, well, let's talk about where Dan is. If you'll look at Judah, which is a southern province that runs up halfway through Jerusalem, and then Benjamin goes up, right through Benjamin, up a little ways through Gibeon, 4 or 5 miles north, and even a little bit north of that. That's Benjamin, and Gibeon is in the province of Benjamin. Then if you go west from Benjamin, you end up with the tribe of Dan, and they were supposed to have the land all the way from there in the hill country down into the Shephelah, the plains there, all the way to the Mediterranean coast, but they were up in the hills in the middle of the country, and they couldn't come down into the flat plains there because of the bad guys. Verse 35 says, in Judges 1 says, "Yet the Amorites persisted in living in Mount Heres and Ajalon, and in Shalbim." If you look at the map, that's right there on the eastern edge of the tribe of Dan up there in the hills. "But when the power of the house of Joseph grew strong, they became forced labor." Well, that's Ephraim and Manasseh, but that's not Dan. Now, Jameson Foster Brown says the reason that the tribe of Dan might not have conquered the aboriginal Canaanites, the Philistines, is because they might have been lazy. Well, that's a value judgment. The text doesn't actually say that. At any rate, they decided they needed some more land, and they weren't going to get it from the Philistines. The Philistines were mean dudes. So they decided to go explore. So they had 5 brave men from their clans, probably 1 man from each clan. Clan is family, sometimes translated as family. And so they sent out, where were these 5 from? They were from Zorah and Eshtaol. If you'll look at the map, that's on the eastern extremity of Dan in the hills right there in the Valley of Sorek, where Delilah was from in the Valley of Sorek. Zorah was where Samson was born. Eshtaol is where he grew up and where he was buried. So these are well-known places here. The Danites sent out their 5 scouts from those 2 places. They scouted out the land and explored it. Now they go north, and as you go north up the hill country, that ridge of mountains like a spine that runs up through the middle of the Promised Land, you get to Ephraim. It's the next tribe north, and they came to the home of Micah. Now this Micah is the same Micah that I mentioned we talked about in the last chapter, the man who stole 1,100 pieces of silver from his mother. His mother so happy she got the money back that she and her son set up an idolatrous place of worship there in his house. Micah had his young son as a priest. He also hired a Levite from Bethlehem, a Levite living in Bethlehem, to come up and serve as priest. And that, of course, that's totally illegal. First of all, it was an ephod. It was not at Shiloh where the ark was. Also, Micah was not a priest, and neither was the Levite that came up from Bethlehem. He wasn't of the tribe of Aaron, so he wasn't allowed to be a priest. So the whole thing is illegal, not to mention the fact they made an idol. That was obviously illegal. Now, they were worshiping Yahweh, but it was using an idol to do it. That's bad business. They also had household teraphim, household idols to associate with the big silver idol that they made. So the Nineites run into this guy, and they spent the night there. Now, they might have spent the night in Micah's house, but probably not. Five people in one house, I don't think so. Five people plus Micah. I assume he had a wife, he had a son, and then, of course, the Levite from Bethlehem was there. No, they probably stayed at a public inn. We go now to Judges, verses 18, 3 through 5. When they, that's the five Danite scouts, were near the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young man, the Levite. And they turned aside there and said to him, "Who brought you here? And what are you doing in this place? And what do you have here?" He, that's the Levite from Bethlehem, said to them, "Thus and so has Micah done to me, and he has hired me, and I have become his priest." They said to him, the five scouts said to the Levite from Bethlehem, "Inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous." Now these five scouts recognized the Levite from Bethlehem. How did they? Well, here's some options. One, the Levite from Bethlehem might have been in Dan, and they might have known the five scouts in Dan. Bethlehem is not all that far from Dan, if you look at the map. But I think it's a better option is they recognized the voice of the young man. In other words, they recognized his accent. Not that they recognized the man, they recognized the voice of the young man, the Levite. Probably had a different accent because it was from a different area. And folks, let me tell you, accents are different. I can even tell the difference between a southern Chinese accent and a northern Chinese accent. And it's very easy to do, even though Chinese is not my first language. I can tell. Reminds me of a story I just ran into a former student of mine 40 years ago when she was in junior high or high school. I can't remember. I was the principal of a Christian school, and she was from Pennsylvania, and I remembered her, and I'm listening to her. I didn't see her. I was on the telephone, and she sounded like she was from the southern hills of Tennessee or maybe western South Carolina or maybe Lexington, South Carolina. She talking like this. I said, "My gosh, where did you get that accent?" And she says, "Oh, all my kinfolk and friends up in Pennsylvania laugh at me when I come up." I can imagine. She really picked it up. So accents change from region to region. And so I think this is what happened. They recognized that he was from a different place than Ephraim. And so they said, "What are you doing here? What you got?" Now you notice they just asked that the illegal priest from Bethlehem would inquire of God for them. They only did that. They didn't rebuke him for being an illegal priest. Such was the corruption of the times. Nobody cared about what the law said. That had long since disappeared, concern for God's law and God's holiness. So they wanted to know whether the way in which they were going would be prosperous, i.e. successful. That's what prosperous means. It doesn't mean, that's according to the prosperity gospel, it doesn't mean that you're going to get rich. They just mean they're going to be successful in their battle or in their search for a new place to live. Now, the interesting question here, when we look at how the priest answered, which we'll see in the next verse, in verse 6, he says, "The way you are going has the Lord's approval," was the Bethlehemite Levite, quote-unquote, priest. Was he speaking by the devil? Was he using tricks? Was he using dark language like the Oracle at Delphi? Ambiguous language that could be translated, that could be interpreted in more than one way so that his honor would always be intact. He can never be accused of giving a false prophecy. Well, let me read you a quote from Adam Clark. Quote, "It is really begging the question to assert, as many commentators have done, that the answer was either a trick of the Levite or suggested by the devil. and that the success of the Danites was merely accidental. In other words, some commentators have problems with God answering this inquiry in a positive manner that was fulfilled. So it sounds like it came from God. Well, how can something come from God when it's coming from a fake priest, an illegal priest? I don't worry about stuff like that too much because I know God can use stupid people to do his will. So that doesn't bother me a bit. Now, in favor of the Danites, they say in verse 5, inquire of God, that's Elohim. That shows the Danites were asking of the true God, not a pagan god like Baal or Astarte or some god like that. And I think this is kind of ironic because they ended up having one of the golden calves of Jeroboam set up in Dan, as from Dan to Beersheba. There was these golden calf worshipped, and that was worship of Yahweh under a false form of idolatry. And that's what they're doing here. That's what Micah was doing. We go now to Judges 18, verses 6 through 7. The priest, that's the Levite from Bethlehem, the priest said to them, to the five Danite scouts, go in peace, your way in which you're going has the Lord's approval. Then the five men departed and came to Laish, and saw the people who were in it living in security, after the manner of the Sidonians, quiet and secure. For there was no ruler humiliating them for anything in the land, and they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone. Now the priest answer, when he says, you have the Lord's approval, this is what John Gill says about that, in reference to the answer as being ambiguous and thus preserving the priest's reputation as a prophet. Quote, some observe that this answer is delivered in ambiguous terms, as generally the oracles of demons were, and might be taken in a good or bad sense, as the event should be, as that their way was before the Lord, and was seen by him either with pleasure or displeasure, with approbation or disapprobation, for their good or for their harm. So that let it fall out as it might, the credit of the oracle was saved. In other words, we can read the priest answer this way. Go in peace. Your way in which you're going has the Lord's approval. The Lord approves sending you up there to get your heads chopped off, to get you destroyed. That's God's will, for you to be destroyed. So that way, if something bad happens, the priest is a good prophet. And if something good happens, the way you're going has the Lord's approval. You're going to go up there and you're going to wipe out your enemies because God approves of that. And that way, the oracle of the Bethlehemite Levite priest is good and his credit is saved, as Gill puts it. This, of course, reminds one of the famous oracle of Delphi in Greece, which was obviously demonic. And I think it was King Croesus of Lydia. Lydia is that ancient kingdom, 6th century BC kingdom or so, in the western end of Anatolia, Asia Minor. And he decides he's going to attack the Persians, who are getting pretty uppity and pretty powerful. So he goes to the Oracle of Delphi, and the Oracle, should I go attack the Persians? And the Oracle says, it is going to be an army is going to be totally destroyed. She didn't mention whose army it was, and so Croesus goes and attacks the Persians, and he gets wiped out. It's a famous story that's quoted over and over again. I hope I have the details basically correct. It's repeated over and over again in the history of ancient Greece. So, verse 7, the five men departed and came to Laish and saw the people who were in it living in security. Now, if you look at the map, you find the Sea of Galilee, go north of the Jordan River till you see a little lake called Lake Hula, also called Lake Merom, but Lake Hula mostly. And then at the northern end of Lake Hula, you keep following the Jordan River, and then you get roughly, maybe 8 miles north of Lake Hula, and you come to right to the east of the Jordan River, a little place called Laish. Now, it's interesting. This town is very famous. It had many names throughout history. The original Canaanite name was Laish, as I just said. It was also known as Leshem in Joshua 19, verse 47. Laish, Leshem, that's getting it from the native language into English. That's close enough. But then the Danites, when they take over the cities, we'll see in just a few verses, they gave it their name of Dan. And then later, during the Hellenistic period, which is roughly during the time of Alexander the Great, 4th century B.C. up until Jesus' time, it was called Peneus, also known as Benias, but Peneus, that's because it became a pagan place associated with the god Pan. And then, in the Roman era, the Romans named it Caesarea Philippi. And, of course, that's where Jesus told Peter, get behind me, Satan. So this place is very, very famous. And I've been there. I guess it's so famous the tour guides will take you there. It's very beautiful, as we'll see here. It was beautiful. It's beautiful in the modern era, just like it was back then in the time of the Deadites. The pagan gods dedicated to Pan, they're still there. They got a cave there with the idols inside that they dug up archaeologically. There's a little tiny stream because it's the head, it's the source of the Jordan River, and they point out the pretty streams, and the plant life was very pretty, I thought. Everything was pretty about it. Now, Laish means a lion, coming from Hebrew, and it was settled by Sidonians. It was a colony that was sent out by the Sidonians. Sidon, of course, is the famous Phoenician city on the Mediterranean coast. Look at Carmel, jutting out there in the northwest corner of Israel on the Mediterranean coast. Go north, you get to Acre. Go north of that, you get to Tyre. Get north of that, you get to Sidon, right there on the coast. Jameson Vossen Brown says about this place, quote, "The soil rich in the abundance and variety of its produce, and the inhabitants, following the peaceful pursuits of agriculture, lived in their fertile and sequestered valley, according to the Sidonian style of ease and security, happy among themselves, and maintaining little or no communication with the rest of the world." Little Shangri-La. The discovery of this northern paradise seemed to the delight of the Danite spies an accomplishment of the priest's prediction. Yes, the Lord has our approval. Look at this place. And it really does. It's a very beautiful place. There were no houses around. It was just countryside everywhere, even today. Now in verse 7 it says the men of Laish was living there after the manner of the Sidonians. I guess Sidon considered themselves very secure there on the coast. It must have been secure. They've been there for years. They're quiet and secure. They had no idea that the Israelites had any designs on the land. They were way up there in the north, far away from where most of the tribes of Israel were, so they wouldn't think Israel would be interested in attacking them. And not to mention that, their city was fortified. So yeah, they had it made, you know, how that goes. Verse 7 says, they were far from the Sidonians. Actually, in modern terms, it's not all that far, just over to the coast, a little bit north maybe. I don't know. I can't see the map here. It's somewhere to the west on the coast, 10, 20, 30 miles. I don't know. It couldn't be that far. But as far as sending them military help, it was a long way away. It was too far away for them to have any help. Also, the people of Laish had no dealings with anyone. That means they had no allies. They didn't think they needed them sitting up there in their little Shangri-La. We go now to Judges 18, verses 8 through 10. When they, that's the five Danite scouts, came back to their brothers at Zorah and Eshtaol, their brother said to them, "What do you report?" They said, "Arise and let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it is very good. And will you sit still? Do not delay to go, to enter, to possess the land. When you enter, you will come to a secure people with a spacious land, for God has given it into your hand, a place where there is no lack of anything that is on the earth." That's a little hyperbolic. Now, when the Danite scouts say, "Don't delay to go to enter to possess the land," I wonder, do they consider the ethics of attacking a peaceful, innocent city? Well, we have to remember these guys were pagans, the Sidonians upon whom the judgment of God had come, although that doesn't ultimately justify Dan's actions. They do a lot of stuff. God does a lot of stuff in judgment, but he doesn't justify the people who are doing the judgment any more than he justified the Babylonians in wiping out the Israelites when he was trying to chastise the Israelites. But I mean, this is basic raw naked aggression. They're going up there and attacking the land and taking it. They said, the five scouts said, it was a spacious land. They're telling their Danite brethren back at Zorah and Eshtaol. Remember, those are the two basic Danite cities, prominent Danite cities where Samson was born and where he grew up. The land around Laish was said to be spacious. It still is. And they say that God has given the land into their hands. Why? Well, maybe they said because the city was undefended and careless and at ease. Maybe it's because of what Micah's priest had said. God has given approval to your trip up there. Some people speculate that maybe when the five scouts say that God had given the land into their hand, it was because the land was given as a part of a lot of the allotment to the tribe of Dan. Well, if so, it's not mentioned anywhere, not mentioned in Joshua. I don't believe that. I just think they were thinking, we got it made. They're not defended. They don't have any allies. And the priest said, God approved of us going up there. We go now to Judges 18, verses 11 through 13. Then from the family of the Danites, from Zorah and from Eshtaol, 600 men armed with weapons of war set out. They went up and camped at Kiriath Yearim in Judah. Therefore they called that place Mahanadan to this day. Mahanadan is the camp of Dan. Behold, it is west of Kiriath Yearim. They passed from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. So five scouts had already been to the house of Micah. They came back to Zorah and Eshtaol. Now they took 600 men back to the house of Micah. Now these 600 armed men were more than just the armed men. Judges 18 verse 21, in a few verses we read this. Then they turned and departed and put the little ones and the livestock and the valuables in front of them. So it was 600 men plus women and children. They camped at Kiriath Yearim in Judah. If we look at the map, we see Zorah and Eshtaol, which is about, 8 or 9 miles northwest of Bethlehem. And then if you go about 6 miles or so northeast of Eshtaol and Zorah, you end up Kiriath Yearim. Kiriath Yearim, according to Easton's, means city of jars. Kiriath is city. Yearim is woods or forest. City of jars, city of woods or forest. It was a Gibeonite town. If you go about 3 or 4 miles northeast of Kiriath Yearim, you get to Gibeon. And, of course, Gibeon is in Benjamin. The place, you might recall, is kind of famous because the ark was brought to this place from Beth-Emesh and put in charge of Abinadab, a Levite. This is after the ark at Shiloh got wiped out from the priest Eli and his two worthless sons, Hophni and Phinehas, and then the ark started wandering all around through the land of the Philistines and then through the land of Israel. Well, at one time, near the end of its journey, before it ended up back in Jerusalem, it was located here at Kiriath Yearim. We go now to Judges 18, verses 14 through 21. Then the five men who went to spy out the country of Laish said to their kinsmen, "Do you know that there are in these houses an ephod and household idols, an engraven image and a molten image? Now therefore consider what you should do." They turned aside there and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, to the house of Micah, and asked him of his welfare. That young man, the Levite, is the Bethlehem priest. The 600 men armed with their weapons of war, who were of the sons of Dan, stood by the entrance of the gate. Now the five men who went to spy out the land went up and entered there and took the graven image and the ephod and household idols and the molten image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with 600 men armed with weapons of war. Now I'm assuming the gate there is the gate of the city, not the gate of Micah's house. So what happens is the 600 men are at the gate. Micah goes out to talk to them, leaves his house unprotected. Then the five scouts go into Micah's house and steal all of his fake religious stuff. Verse 18, Judges 18. When these went into Micah's house and took the graven image, the ephod and household idols and the molten image, the priest said to them, "What are you doing?" Now, I don't know where Micah was, but the priest was with the 600 Danites at the gate, and then he somehow figures out that Micah's house is being robbed. I don't know where Micah is at this time. But the priest from Bethlehem, the fake Levite priest, says, "What are you doing?" Verse 19, they said to him, that's the five Danite scouts, said to the Levite fake priest, "Be silent, put your hand over your mouth and come with us and be to us a father and a priest. It is better for you to be a priest to the house of one man. Is it better for you to be a priest to the house of one man, i.e. Micah, or to be a priest to a tribe, i.e. the tribe of Dan, or to be a priest to a tribe and a family in Israel?" The priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and household idols and the graven image and went among the people, among the 600 who were standing around at the gate. Then they turned and departed and put the little ones and the livestock and the valuables in front of them. All right, just to rehash this, the 600 men came up, put themselves around the gate of light of Micah's city in Ephraim. The five scouts go to Micah's house. Micah's not there, but the priest is. Then the priest returned to see the 600 men at the gate, probably at the invitation of the five spies. And while the priest goes to see the 600 men at the gate, the five spies rob his house. This is what John Gill says. The five spies, quote, "came to Micah's house and saluted the young man, and after that salutation told him there were such a number of their brethren at the gate of the city, very probably, who would be glad to see him, and the young man, being desirous also of seeing them and paying his respects to them, went with them thither, and after they had introduced him, left him discourses with them, and then returned to his apartment, after which they robbed him." Now the Danites offer the priest to go work for the Danites instead of for Micah. The Danites didn't know what to do with all that idol that they had gotten. and the silver idol, the graven silver idol, and also the teraphim, the household idols. They didn't know what to do with idols. They weren't priests. They needed a priest. And so they tempted him, kind of like tempting a Baptist preacher to move from the small Baptist church to the big city Baptist church. Now, this priest sounds sort of mercenary. He got paid by Micah, and now he's getting paid more. John Gill says he was, quote, a, quote, covetous, ambitious, rambling, and unsettled. He had, quote, a covetous, ambitious, rambling, and unsettled disposition of mind. The priest goes out with the 600, and they head out. Why did he surround himself with the 600? I say he surrounded. He says he went among the people, which sounds like he was surrounded by the people. Why? For protection against Micah's wrath. When Micah finds out, he's going to say, I'm going to come get you. Some people have even speculated, or someone has speculated, that the fake Levite priest, is trying to imitate priests bearing the ark. The priest on the Exodus traveled in the middle of the camp surrounded by the tribes as they surrounded the tabernacle. Well, there was no tabernacle to be surrounded here, but there was the idol and the teraphim and the ephod. And so they were going to march in the middle of all that as they went up. I think that's stretching it a little bit. I just think they went out with 600 people. The Levite, fake Levite priest went out with 600 people and felt pretty safe about it. Now, notice the mention of all the little ones and the livestock. That shows that the Danites had no intention of returning home. They weren't going to go up there and see if they could win or lose, and then if they won, to come back and get their kids and their wives. No, they weren't even thinking about losing the battle. They were very confident. We go now to Judges 18, verses 22 through 26. When they had gone some distance from the house of Micah, they being the 600 Danites, plus the fake priest, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house assembled and overtook the sons of Dan. They cried to the sons of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, what is the matter with you that you have assembled together? He said, you have taken away my gods which I made. Isn't that great? He made a god. And the priest, and have gone away. What do I have besides? So how can you say to me, what is the matter with you? So Micah finds himself in high dudgeon here. The sons of Dan said to him, do not let your voice be heard among us, or else fierce men will fall upon you, and you will lose your life with the lives of your household. So the sons of Dan went on their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house. So Micah talked real big until he calculated the comparative strength of the armed forces there and said, ooh, I'm going to get beat if I try to attack these Danites. 600 people. He had a few people in the neighborhood helping him out. Now, verse 22 says that the 600 men had gone some distance from the house of Micah. That's probably because it took Micah a little while to realize he'd been robbed. He wasn't there, remember. And then when he came back home and he found all of his idolatrous stuff gone, then he had to go get his neighbors together to fight. Now, why would the neighbors not just say to Micah, oh, you go fight him yourself. It's not none of our business. Well, you could say they were altruistic. They wanted to help their neighbors out. I don't think so. John Gill says they probably had their identity wrapped up in those idols, too. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say it was clear the illegal chapel was opened to the neighborhood. So they felt like their God had been stolen, and by golly, they didn't want to put up with that. So they took out with Micah to chase down the 600 Danites. Now, of course, the Danites are moving slowly. They had women and children and livestock with them, so the pursuing friends of Micah caught them fairly easily. Now, in verse 24, when Micah starts moaning and groaning to the Danites, he says, what do I have besides these idols that you stole from me? Well, what he meant was, what do I have financially besides what you stole from me? I'm sure he was making good money. People were probably going to that fake idol and leaving offerings there in his house as the temple. And so we see here that Micah deems the idols as more important than his wife and children. What do I've got? I don't have anything. Well, you got a wife. You got one child was a priest in the fake worship center of it in his house. But no, he doesn't have anything when these idols are gone. And that's the way most idolaters are. They completely ignore the good things in life. And all they can think about is their idol. As Gollum said in Lord of the Rings, my precious. Their precious money. Because this is basically what it's about, right? Is money. He's losing his source of income there. Now, the Danites respond to Micah's hot words with basically, give me your money or give me your life. As the crook robbing somebody in New York City proverbially says, your money or your life. In fact, they say in verse 25, shut up, don't let your voice be heard among us, which is a fancy way of saying shut up, or else fierce men, that's the 600 men, will fall on you and you will lose your life. Shut up, lose your life, and the lives of your household. That means all your family members are going to get killed too. Well, with that threat, Micah turns back. He was better off losing this battle. He lost his idols. Well, idols are not a good thing to keep around. So he lost the battle, but he really won the war. We go now to Judges 18, verses 27 through 31, and we will finish up this audio. After they, that's the 600 Danites, had taken the gods Micah had made, and remember there's a translation issue. Some people think he made two gods. I've decided that it was one god because there wasn't enough silver to make two gods. 1,100 pieces of silver is not enough. But there was also the household gods, the terebinth. So after the 600 Danites had taken the gods Micah had made and the priest that belonged to him, the fake Levite priest from Bethlehem, they went to Laish, to a quiet and unsuspecting people. They killed them with their swords and burned down the city. There was no one to rescue them because it was far from Sidon and they had no alliance with anyone. And by the way, I said earlier that this was an unprovoked attack and was hard to morally justify. That's not to blame God for that. The Danites did that, not God. Verse 28, there was no one to rescue the people of Laish because it was far from Sidon. Sidon was the mother country that colonized Laish. It's on the Mediterranean coast, too far away to send any help. And they had no alliance with anyone. It was in a valley that belonged to Beth-Rehob. They rebuilt the city and lived in it. The 600 Danites rebuilt Laish and lived in the city. They named the city Dan after the name of their ancestor Dan, who was born to Israel. The city was formerly named Laish. The Danites set up the carved image for themselves. That's the carved image they stole from the house of Micah in Ephraim. Jonathan, son of Gershom, son of Moses, or son of Manasseh, depending on how it's translated, and his sons were priests for the Danite tribe until the time of the exile from the land. So they set up for themselves Micah's carved image that he had made, and it was there as long as the house of God was in Shiloh. Now verse 21 says, after the Danites had taken the gods Micah had made. Now Micah does not say right here that they're gods, but if he's calling them gods and he's trying to worship the true God, Adam Clark, who's a soft heart, Adam Clark tries to justify Micah in saying that, well, he really means representation of divine things, not true gods. I don't believe that for a minute, Micah. He thought his terebinth and his silver idol was a true god, was a god, a little g god. Laish was populated by a quiet and unsuspecting people. The NESB has a quiet and secure people. They were totally unsuspecting of an attack. Sidon was so far away, there was no time to give them aid. They had no alliances. They were dead meat. Now, a geographical notation here in the text, it says that Laish was in a valley that belonged to Beth-Rehob. If you look at the map, let's see, a Galilee, north of that is Lake Hula. You go about 6, 7, 8 miles, let's say about maybe 10 miles north of Lake Hula in the Jordan Valley there, right there at the headwaters of the Jordan River is Laish, later named Dan. And then if you go to the west across the Jordan River, a stream it is by this time, over to the road that runs up the valley, then to the east of that robe, and then, whoops, up a large mountain peak or mountains that surround the Jordan Valley there is a place called Beth-Rehob. It's about 8 or 9 miles to the northwest of Lake Hula. Now, the Danites, they burnt the city down, then they rebuilt the city. I guess they had to burn the city down in order to beat the native Sidonians. They named the city Dan. I should be happy about this. Unfortunately, Dan is a place noted for idolatry, golden calf worship under Rehoboam. Samson was a Danite, and he was a gambler, a liar, a murderer, and a whoremonger. Sometimes I wonder why I was named Dan. It's not the best name. I've got a granddaughter that's named Bera. Bera was the name of the king of Sodom. So I guess we're not determined by our name. Now, in verse 30, the Danites set up that carved image for themselves. They were determined to have an idol. It was an idol that was supposed to represent Yahweh, so that's half good and half bad, but it was still an idol. They had respect for those idols. They thought those idols had won them the victory against the Sidonians there at Laish. Here's what Adam Clark says about this. Quote, the Danites were properly the first dissenters from the public established worship of the Jews. Remember, that was at Shiloh, which is south of where they are now in Manasseh. But they seem to have departed as little as possible from the Jewish forms. And I'm reading from Adam Clark, and he does his best to justify the Danites. He's a soft heart. Seems like nobody can ever do anything wrong. Their worship being conducted in the same way, the Danites worship in the same way as the Jews, but not in the same place. The same way, worshiping an idol? Surely it was better to have had this, Clark continues, allowing it to be unconstitutional worship, than to have been wholly destitute of the ordinances of God. I think we have not sufficient ground from the text to call these persons idolaters. Really? They have an idol, and they're worshiping the idol, and they're not idolaters? Clark continues, I believe they could not prosper without. I believe they worshiped the true God according to their light and circumstances from a conviction that they could not prosper without his approbation, and that they could not expect that approbation if they did not offer to him a religious worship. They endeavored to please him, though the means they adopted were not the most proper. Well, I think that is pretty pitiful. No, they were idolaters. Here's what Jameson Fawcett Brown says about this quote. Their distance, the Danites' distance, secluded them from the rest of the Israelites, and doubtless this, which was their apology for not going to Shiloh, was the cause of perpetuating idolatry among them for many generations. In other words, it's just too much trouble to worship the true God in the proper way that the true God wants us to worship him. It's too much trouble, so we're going to do it this way. Oh, does that sound like the modern Christian church? I could think of 1,000 examples of that. Now, this fake Dan worship, or this illegal Dan worship, had a priest. Jonathan, son of Gershom, son of Moses. Now, this Jonathan is probably the name of the Levite priest that came up from Bethlehem. It doesn't say that, but most people seem to assume that. Gives a little bit of his genealogy. Nobody knows who that Gershom is, and Gershom was the son of Moses. This is an interesting textual note that has absolutely nothing to do with your spiritual sanctification, has nothing to do with a proper understanding of the gospel, of the Bible. But I was curious, because other translations have Jonathan, the son of Gershom, was the son of Manasseh, not Moses. The King James, the Young's Literal Translation, and the New American Standard Bible say that Gershom was the son of Manasseh, not the son of Moses, whoever this Moses is. Well, I looked at some translations. The King James, the Young's Literal Translation, the New American Standard Bible say that Gershom was the son of Manasseh. But the American Standard Version, the Bible in Basic English, the Holman Christian Study Bible, the Darby Bible, and the God's Word says that Gershom was the son of Moses. So the translations are roughly split. So I looked a little further, and I looked at the note in the Darby translation, and Darby has this, quote, the Septuagint, etc., read Manasseh, but Jewish authority, followed by Jerome, supports the opinion that the text was corrupted. In other words, it originally said Moses, but the Septuagint had a corrupt text that came out with, that translated it as Manasseh. The Holman Christian Study Bible note says some Hebrew manuscripts, Septuagint, and what they mean is some Hebrew manuscripts and some Septuagint manuscripts, and the Vulgate, meaning those some Septuagint manuscripts and the Vulgate have Moses, whereas other Hebrew manuscripts read Manasseh. So we got a split in the manuscript authority, and not all of the Septuagint texts have Moses. Some of them have Manasseh, and so nobody knows who this guy is. Ellicott says some Septuagint manuscripts have Moses, which means some of them have Manasseh. And so, no one knows who this guy is. Some speculate it should be Moses, the famous Moses, because of different pointing in the text, in the Hebrew text. And people speculate that the pointing was changed because it was a reproach for Moses to have an idolatrous grandson. We go to verse 31. So they, that's the Danites, set up for themselves Micah's carved image that he had made, and it was there in Dan, in Laish, as long as the house of God was in Shiloh. That's the tabernacle of God. They had it housed somehow in Shiloh, which was to the south of them, south of the Sea of Galilee, in the tribe of Manasseh. Now, of course, the ark got stolen from there by the Philistines during the time of Eli, which was when Samuel was a little boy. That's roughly mid-11th century or so, a couple hundred years later probably. So at any rate, for a long, long time, the tribe of Dan had a competing place of religion, competing with the true worship at Shiloh. Application point there, always the true church of God will have satanic, fleshly substitutes and competitors. All you got to do is go down the street here in the South and go into some of these churches, they're not even worth saving in a brick or anywhere else. A lot of places, not just the South, all over America. Go into these places with all this woke crapola that's being preached now, critical race theory. They're fake. Oh, yeah, they're worshiping the true God, just like the Danites were, but they're doing it in a way that is totally reprehensible. Ladies and gentlemen, with those stringent words, we are now finished with Judges chapter 18. And now we are ready to go to Judges 19. In our next audio, verses 1 through 30, we'll look at a Levite and his concubine, one of the bloodiest and goriest stories in the Bible. I hope you stay tuned for that exciting story, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.